Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone, and yes, indeed, let's get started, shall we? I have a very special guest on the show tonight. Not just special, but somebody I hope to work with in the near future. But I'm going to hold that back just for a moment because I don't want to put any pressure on this person or his crew. But I've been thinking a lot lately about where I'm going in my own world with the paranormal. I met this gentleman at the Janesville Metaphysical Paranormal Conference a few weeks ago. And we had a very brief chat with each other. After all, it's a busy place and there were a lot of people around. And of course, there were things to do and places to go, that kind of thing. But what I really appreciated probably more than anything was their reaching out just to speak with me a little bit further about my program. And I thank you very much, by the way, for doing that. That made me feel very good inside. Most people don't always practice being grateful. I try to practice being grateful on a daily basis. Sometimes it just doesn't work. It just all depends on what your day is about and who you're dealing with. But when I spoke with this guest, especially I believe we had a pretty deep conversation prior to and maybe a smidge during the shows, I think we both came to the realization that we try to make the best out of our lives and out of our days, no matter what cards are dealt to us. And if you were to ask me a year ago where I thought I would be a year later, I honestly would not have been able to tell you anything. Because 2 years ago, I was suffering very badly with COVID to the point where I almost didn't make it twice. And I started to practice after the point of coming out of it to just try to be as grateful as I could be. Also extend my hand to you, the listener, in the best way I possibly could to continue this passion of mine with the paranormal. And I suppose you can throw in a little extraterrestrial in there as well. Okay, so I don't want to leave everybody out, but I'm still on my own journey of learning. So I declared the other day that this would be my year of learning. And I am involved with a number of different mini kinds of activities. I'm going to a few conferences that are held in high regard. I do not know at this time if the conferences that I have been signed up for or designated to speak at will go on, because conventions and conferences are definitely having a difficult time right now, bringing in people and keeping people interested in coming. And so there's a big question mark that swirls around my upcoming year. But I'm hopeful, and I'm grateful, and I am also thankful. And I'm thankful very much for this guest, like I said, who had approached me at my booth while at the conference, and potentially now, maybe, no guarantees, I might be able to extend myself one step further. And we'll talk more about that at another time. Now, as they say, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, you're going to meet Dan Norville of Expedition Entity. Stay tuned.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
My guest this evening is Dan Norville of the TV show Expedition Entity. First and foremost, Dan, thank you, and of course, welcome to the show. What I need to do is give you a brief introduction of Dan and the show, of which he and his partners and crew produce. And then we are going to get into a very lengthy discussion with Dan about just everything. So let's see, where do I begin? So I pulled this from a very small bio that I found of them on their website, and I believe you can go to Facebook and put in Expedition Entity, and on there you'll see a little bit about the projects that he and Larry and his cast currently do. And what I pulled from there says this, that they bring their own perspective to the paranormal. That would be ghost hunters Dan Norville and Larry Eisler, and that they have been investigating together for over 10 years. They have investigated historical locations, haunted sites. Most of them are local, and also a variety of cemeteries. Dan and Larry's TV show can be seen on the subscription TV network ParaFlix, and he's got information about that on Facebook under his name, Expedition Entity. So I would encourage everybody to go there to take a look at that, because this is an up-and-coming network, TV subscription network, and right now, from what I understand, primarily focuses on, of course, the paranormal. So lots of interesting shows on it. Very, very fun to watch. Now, Dan and Larry produced this show, but it didn't always just start out that way. It started out very simply with their skills of being good at their videography. And Larry, I believe, is going to school and graduating in the degree with film. And so they've been putting together their own little mini-series that you can watch on ParaFlix. And I think you're going to find it to be well done and very entertaining. Also, they have won and been nominated for several awards. I believe Dan had mentioned to me that they had won 2 awards of many that they have been in the categories that they're in for. And I am sure that with their skills and their talents, there will be more awards coming in the future. Dan and Larry, they bring to their audience a variety of paranormal shows and programming. Expedition Entity, again produced by them, is also brought to you by what he had referred to in his notes as a place called paranormalwarehouse.com. Now, I don't know much about that location or what it entails, but I'm sure if you look into it, it'll soon reveal itself very nicely. The paranormal isn't just found in known haunted locations. The paranormal can also be found in your backyard. The universe is full of mystery. It's full of energy. And of course, because of that, gets the title and the award of paranormal. So, without further ado, I would like to now bring this interview right to Dan. And once again, thank you, Dan and Expedition Entity, for being a part of my show. Well, Dan, thank you so much for being on this show today. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
For those of you who are listening tonight, I think you're in for a real treat because Dan has a very special background to me, and I think we're going to learn an awful lot about our conversation tonight. So I just want you to grab some popcorn and sit back and enjoy this interview. Dan, why don't we start out with maybe you telling everybody a little bit about yourself and what you're currently doing.
Okay. Well, I am Dan Norvell. I have been involved with the paranormal since 1996. I currently am shooting a show called Expedition Entity on Paraflix. And we also are authors, my partner Larry Eisler and myself, of two books that are out right now, Ghosts of the Black Hawk War. And I have another book that's out that's based on their fictional ghost stories, loosely based on experiences that Larry and I have had. The difference with that book is that those stories are being told by the ghost. And that book is called Afterlife Anthology, both available on Amazon if any of your listeners are interested. But we, Larry and myself, we run a production company, and you know, when we go out and do these investigations, we, of course, are interested in the spirits and helping the spirits if that's what they need and stuff. But when we started Expedition Entity, you know, we were just a couple of investigators with teams. I ran a team when I met Larry back in 2010. And, you know, I started having kind of a brainstorm of where can I take this? Where can I show people what we're doing, where we're at here? And that's kind of when Expedition Entity started coming into my mind of showing people the less well-known places. And, you know, the thing is that I've watched many shows just like many other people have. And, you know, Waverly Hills Sanitarium, all the other Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, St. Augustine Lighthouse, all places that I'd love to go to myself. The thing is I don't need to go there because many, many other teams have done respectable research at those locations and have put it out there. No, I kind of wanted to say, okay, the Black Hawk War, the battlegrounds, there's men that were massacred there that lost their lives there and are buried in the very spot that they died. What stories did they have to tell? And lo and behold, we went and went to some of these spots and these old battlegrounds and some of these cemeteries nobody thinks of going to, and we're getting answers, and we're getting a lot of answers, and we're getting tangible evidence. And it's, you know, it's been a really eye-opening experience.
I would agree with Dan that sometimes all you have to do is look in your backyard. Well, not that literally, but the thing is what Dan's trying to impress upon us, and I also agree with him, is that sometimes all of these popular spots that you hear about that are perceived to be haunted, or maybe they're newly haunted, based on all of these other research teams that might go in there. You never know what happens. One moment they might be bringing something in there or conjuring something up that shouldn't be there. And I agree, Dan, that sometimes in your own backyard, in your own town, in your own spaces, you can have some very interesting stories that come from the beyond. Let's go back a moment, and I kind of want to build the world of Dan here for a second. And so I am wondering, so Dan, when you were younger, and of course you can define the age as you like, there had to be some point in your youth where you became interested in the afterlife or the paranormal. And you, sometimes people just don't think about that because we get so busy with other things. But if you can go back in time a little bit, was there a point when you became a little bit more intrigued, either about history or about the paranormal or an experience? What can you tell us about your life as a younger person?
Well, when I was 13 years old, I was walking. Now, I grew up in a town of about 1,200 people in northern Illinois. My hometown, which I did move back to and presently live in today, is about 60, 70 miles west of Chicago. So where, you know, my little hometown is a frontier town, was founded in 1882. Lots of stuff, you know, as in pretty much every frontier town in the whole United States happened here at one time or another. So I was walking up to my local record store. We had a record store that doubled as an arcade when I was a kid. And I was walking up there, and I was walking by some of the older buildings, and I happened to look over across the street, and there was a shadow of a person in a cloak, and kind of like, not a fedora, but more like a cowboy hat, maybe. And the shadow was walking up the other side of the street. And it was kind of keeping pace with me, but not really paying attention to me, per se. And I was kind of watching, and the shadow kept walking, and it got to an area of a building, a newer building that was probably built in the 1970s. It turned and walked right through the wall.
Interesting.
And, you know, at the time, of course, I stood there with my mouth open and my eyes wide and couldn't believe what I was seeing. And you know, of course, I then went from walking to a full sprint to the record store to tell all my friends what I'd just seen. And of course, they pretty much thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
But looking back now, and looking at the history of my hometown, there were other buildings there at the time. And that, you know, that could have just been a residual haunt that, you know, everything was just set right. And I happened to walk in on whatever hit off the play button. And, you know, that shadow was probably a shadow of what happened 100 years ago. And this guy was just walking into a house or into a saloon that used to actually be there. That wasn't there in my time, but was in his. That's kind of what I think happened there. But I was really hooked from that point on.
So let me, you know, this is not the first time that I have heard a similar story to this. When you were talking, I was sitting here thinking to myself going, where have I heard this before? And I just can't remember offhand. But my question would be to you, when you were noticing this shadow, and you said, what was it, across the way, like across the street or something like that?
Yeah, I was on one side of the street and the shadow was on the other side.
Right. Okay. So was it keeping pace with you as you were walking along, or did you come to a standstill and just watched it continue to move in the direction it was going?
When I first took notice of the shadow, it was keeping pace with me.
Yeah.
And then I kind of stopped and watched, and it kept moving and probably went an extra 50 feet and then turned and walked through the wall of the building that was there.
Yeah, interesting.
So, you know, after the years of research that I've done personally and stuff, that's why I would say it was probably a residual haunt, only because it never really took notice of me. Okay. And I think when it was keeping pace with me, that was probably just coincidental, because it didn't stop when I did. It didn't stop and look never looked my way, never paid any attention to me or anything else for that matter. Just went to where it was going and entered that door that used to be there probably when he was alive.
Yeah, that's one thing that I know. I had just been to the DeSoto Hotel in, where was this? Galena, Illinois. I was just there a few months ago. And they had a very similar thing. They someone had noticed, I think they called it the gray or the black lady or something like that. And it was a shadow and walked right through the wall. And they had busted out the area where she had walked through and discovered that it was at one time a door to probably a room or whatever. But when you say that, and it might have been walking like right into what it was at the time, perhaps a door going into a building or going into a home or going into some place, that makes perfectly good sense. Now, of course, residual, we have to kind of explain that to the audience, especially any newbies that are hearing this language for the first time. So Dan, can you kind of explain to people the difference between what a residual haunt might look like or imprint versus an intelligent haunt?
Absolutely. A residual haunt, a lot of the residual haunt theory is based on the stone tape theory. And the stone tape theory is basically that emotions or an event can imprint itself onto an environment. And under certain conditions, basically that imprint is like being recorded on, you know, video, let's just say, just so it's more understandable. And for whatever reason, the conditions become right and you are able to see that apparition or shadow or person or whatever in that environment at that particular time. The residual haunt is, it doesn't pay any attention to you. It has no recognition of anybody there. It does not, it will not interact with you no matter how hard you try, because you're seeing one, you know, 1 minute in time that's been imprinted on an environment. An intelligent haunt is a haunt that the spirit will interact with you. They will answer questions. They will maybe move something. They will maybe show themselves upon being asked. A residual haunt is going to replay over and over and over again until the end of time, and maybe you'll be lucky enough to witness it, and maybe you won't. But an intelligent haunt is going to interact with you. So for residual, there's no interaction. You could probably walk up through that shadow and it's never going to recognize you're there, because all it is basically a tape that's being replayed over and over again in that moment when the conditions are right to let it out of the environment.
And so when you were younger and you took note of this for the first time, I'm sure it probably at least startled you a little bit, or you probably thought, what the heck, right? What did you, after that point, did you like, now keep in mind, listeners, that, you know, back in the day, and I know many of you hate that phrase, back in the day, but it's true, back in the day, we would have to do a lot of research in situations by going to the library, or maybe if there was something of a crumb in a newspaper, which it depends on how political the newspaper was and what they would print and not print. But when we became intrigued back in the day about something, we didn't always have a lot of resources like we do now, especially with the amount of television programming, cable programming, podcasting, you name it, that we have to at least try to help educate us to at least a certain perspective and to a certain point. So, Dan, what did you do when that happened to start educating yourself a little bit more on what you thought you may have seen?
I talked to my father about it and told him what I had seen, and he didn't really say that I was crazy or anything. You got to think, I'm old enough to remember that if you heard something in the middle of the night, your parents would go, it's the wind or something, go to bed. There's no such thing as ghosts. And, you know, for some of us that are in that generation of being told that, you know, you got to think, just in the last 20 years have people been very, very accepting of the paranormal. Before 20 years ago, everybody was crazy if they thought that there were ghosts around. So, you know, my dad kind of said, well, I don't think you saw a ghost. He said, but the history of the town, he goes, we were kind of wild before we were established as a town here. You know, the first settlers in my hometown were here in 1850. Larry and I actually in my local cemetery found a burial that was from 1817. Now, Illinois didn't become a state until 1818. So there were people in this area, you know, albeit it probably wasn't a town back in 1818 or 1850, but by the time 1882 rolled around and they were established as a town, it was a prairie town. I mean, there were probably shootouts in the street and, you know, everything east of the Mississippi before 1832, you know, was the Wild West. If you weren't part of the old world out in New England, you were the Wild West. You were the prairie. You were the frontier.
That's right.
So I'm quite sure a lot of weird stuff happened here. And but I never really got an answer to what was there or what could have been there.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Well, the thing is we all have our own, as I say, moment in time. And the younger generation, they have their moments in time now. The older generation, we're building on our moments in time. But before our housing developments, before our houses went up and whatever, that is correct. A lot of this was prairie land, and a lot of it was also lots of cowboys and Indians and lots of unrest and a lot of terrible things happening and a lot of, in some places, of course, the Civil War and, or, you know, these types of little wars that were going on. And there's, depending on the part of the country that you live in and that you're listening to regarding this podcast right now, understand that there's different imprints in different areas based on whatever kind of unrest happened back in the day. And that can go as far back as maybe even the early, I would say more like the middle 1800s, when a lot of the immigrants were also coming over here and walking the land, trying to figure out where they're going to put their new home or place it. A lot of us, when we don't have that, we have the luxury of just saying, I want to live here. I want to live here. But the history that can be below that home or that subdivision or that house that used to be wherever out in wherever land, a lot of people just don't realize that, because that's something we don't have to think about until we have a situation. So, Dan, let's go back a second again to, you brought up the cemetery, and I want to just ask you some generalizations about different things that pop into my head now. And the one thing you had mentioned was cemeteries. So I would like to ask you what your impressions have been regarding, have you investigated in many cemeteries? And if you have, what have you felt or concluded about your discoveries in some of these cemeteries?
Well, you know, cemeteries are, half the paranormal community doesn't ever want to investigate them. The other half thinks it's cool to investigate them. Common sense would tell you that if you want to talk to ghosts, you go to where the dead people are, and the dead people are in cemeteries. Now, some people think that that's very disrespectful. You shouldn't be going into people's final resting places and asking questions. But here's the thing, is back in the 1700s, late 1700s, and one of the first major cemeteries ever brought into existence exists out on the East Coast in New England. Cemeteries were made and meant to be visited. They used to have picnic tables and all sorts of stuff. Back in the early 1800s to mid 1800s, it wasn't uncommon to go to Sunday service and then go to the cemetery and have a picnic with your family. They were meant to be visited, you know, out in many of these cemeteries. And let me just tell you, if you ever get a chance to go to Chicago to some of the cemeteries in there, you want to talk about artwork. And that's the point. They used to make these very ornate gravestones and statues and things like that, because some people couldn't travel to New York City to see an art gallery back in the day. They didn't have to. All they had to do is go down to their local cemetery, and during their picnic with their family on Sunday afternoon while they were visiting their deceased loved ones, they had access to see awesome artwork. And, you know, so for people to say it's disrespectful, I beg to differ. So we went to these cemeteries, and we started out with just an EVP recorder, a simple voice recorder, and a great big old VHS camera that you couldn't see anything in the dark with anyway, unless you were shining flashlights. That's how I started way back in the late 90s. And lo and behold, we were catching voices on these voice recorders and these tape recorders, and we were catching shadows on these old VHS recorders. And now it could be argued, because we were using flashlights and an old VHS movie recorder, could those have been people? And we were just, absolutely they could have been. And I keep that in mind even when I'm out there today. Now, today we have thermal, so I can tell if it's a person or if it's not. But I still keep it in mind that, hey, anybody could be in that cemetery. It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm hearing, you know, the voice of a spirit or a ghost. But we've caught some amazing stuff there. As a matter of fact, season one of Expedition Entity, we went to my hometown cemetery, Maple Cemetery. We caught some awesome stuff using dowsing rods, some awesome answers, and we also caught some amazing answers on what we use that's called the Phasma Box. And I was called by name several times on the Phasma Box. So I stand by my statement of you wanna see and record ghosts, you go to where the dead people are, and they're in the cemeteries.
All right. So I've got something to add to that, and then I'm going to twist a question here for you. Yeah. Yes, I agree. Depending on your religious background or depending on how you were raised and especially about how to, like when you go into a cemetery, for example, to be respectful, back in my day, as a younger person, I was told not to speak, not to talk, to be respectful, don't stand on top of the grave. Well, if you can figure out where it is to begin with, I mean, even though they have headstones and stuff, it's still, you're walking over basically the body of the casket area anyway. But, so there's a certain way that you act in cemeteries. And of course, you don't want to ever, 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 ever be disrespectful or cause any kind of damage to what you see in there, because, you know, that's at the expense of somebody who put it there. But I do know, in talking with a couple of my former guests on the show, that out in Hollywood, for example, they are now, or they have for the last, I don't know how many years, started putting up some kind, I wish I knew the name of these things, but it's like you go in, and if the cemetery is really big, it's kind of like one of those digital or LED kind of panels that's in there, and you can type in a name or see what's on the directory and touch it. And then it would come up and tell you where they're located and would give you kind of a biography of this person. And I thought, well, that's really fascinating, because how many people go into cemeteries half the time and they sit there and wander them for, you know, God knows how long, trying to find their relative or somebody or whatever. So I thought that that was a really cool and interesting thing altogether. Now, here comes my question to you, Dan. So there is the belief, yes, there's many different beliefs out there regarding cemeteries. Some people feel that if they go in there, that they might be able to call up their loved ones. Okay, we'll start with that. Other people feel that since they're deceased, that they're not there anymore, that they've gone to a different place, and you're essentially talking to an empty grave with nobody there except you and yourself. Okay, I have had great success, by the way, going into where my family, primary family, is buried, and relatives, and with my, I have a special program that I use and connect with really well, where the words that are given to me are very intelligent and they're very much in order, and they make a lot of a lot of sense. The only thing sometimes that I'm nervous about is whether or not I'm truly talking to the apparition that I feel I'm talking to or my relative, or if it's something roaming around in the cemetery along the trickster line or more of a negative entity kind of line trying to disguise itself as somebody that you might know and then wear down your vulnerabilities, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so my question to you is this, and also I'd like you to give some guidance here to our listeners. When you go into some of these cemeteries, I would like to believe or presume that you take some precautionaries when you go in there. Have you ever run across anything of a negative nature? How would you protect yourself and make sure that you're not going to fall victim to some of these negative targets? Because I hear that some of this stuff can wander around in there. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I grew up Catholic. I now consider myself a recovering Catholic. Yes, you do have to protect yourself. You do have to be mindful that it may be something negative presenting itself as an innocent little girl or an innocent little boy or, you know, some nice old lady. But here's really the thing is, you know, your protection is only as good as the faith that you have in it. So, and I'm not going to come onto your show, Dr. Kelly, and start preaching religion because that doesn't matter. What matters is that if you feel that you're protected by carrying rose quartz or hematite, then you need to have faith that that's going to protect you. For me, if I have faith that it is God and his son looking over me and Saint Michael, then that's what I need to have faith in and believe that that's what is protecting me. You know, I've had fellow ghost hunters, investigators, whatever, come up to me and say, well, you know, I drink holy water and I wear 10 crosses around my neck. Well, you can wear a million crosses around your neck, but if you don't really have faith in what that represents to you is protecting you, then you're going to have, you can have that 1,000 crosses around your neck and it's not going to do a darn thing for you. The best thing that I can say is you have to be confident, you have to be respectful, and you have to have faith that whatever it is you believe in, whether it's Buddha, Muhammad, you know, Jesus, the stones, if you're Wiccan, if you're, you know, whatever the case is, as long as you have faith that that is protecting you, you probably will be okay. But you have to have that respect and you have to use common sense along with that stuff, and you'll probably 90% of the time be okay. Now, I have gotten an attachment before. I have had friends get attachments before. I have had negative things happen to me in cemeteries before. I've been hit. I've been scratched. I was pulled over the fence one night, and it left 2 handprints on my forearms for 3 hours. Nice big red handprints that Larry actually caught me being pulled over the fence on video, but it was when we were still using mini DV tape, and we've just never transferred it over. And it was kind of personal because I'm here to tell you, Dr. Kelly, being pulled over the fence, and I go about 280 pounds, and I'm a corrections officer. Being pulled over the fence by something I couldn't see, I'm going to be honest with you, it scared the living daylights out of me.
Yeah.
Not really comfortable with putting that tape out so that everybody sees that. Yeah, I mean, if you go in there, respect and the belief that whatever it is that you believe in is actually going to keep you safe are probably the two biggest things that are going to protect you in those situations, whether you're in a cemetery, whether you're in, an old prison, whether you're in an old sanatorium, whatever the case may be, that's probably your safest bet. The other thing is if something feels wrong, don't stand there and be the tough guy. Get out. If you feel like you need to get out, get out. don't stand there, because I did it once and that's how I got an attachment.
Yeah, I'm going to add to what you said here. I was trying to take some mental notes and all of a sudden these little triggers were going through my head for things that I've gone through. I'm going to first talk about the physical force of the unseen just for a second here. So we don't always know what we're up against or dealing with. Right now, from what I understand and have been going through my own journey, we don't always know if it's spiritual, what we call paranormal, what we call extraterrestrial. We don't know what's called ultra-terrestrial. We don't know. I know that many in the community would like to umbrella all of these things under the paranormal topic. I'm not so sure yet I am that comfortable in wanting to include all of that under one topic. But Dan, for example, when you said that you were pulled over the fence, I was kicked up into the air in bed by an unseen force that I believed was underneath the bed that didn't like me snoring at the time, or at least that's what I believed it was. I believed it was paranormal and it didn't like my snoring. And I woke up flying in the air and bouncing back onto the bed. And I was probably well into my 200s at the time. In other words, I was heavier than what I've been lately. And that's embarrassing to have to admit to somebody that, you know, wow, how much force did, what was it that it was that it actually did that? To this day, I believed it was paranormal up until the point where I've been having what I believe to be extraterrestrial visitations and issues with that type of phenomena. And now I'm not even so sure anymore that what I experienced was paranormal. What if it was extraterrestrial pulling me up in the air, getting whatever it was, and it just so happens I woke up finding myself bouncing on the bed. My husband didn't move a stitch. You know, he didn't even wake up. So I don't know, but I know how, I guess I can tell you that I know how you may have felt being pulled over and feeling that way. And I know how I felt, not necessarily being in my shape, being literally airlifted and bouncing on a bed. Do you believe, and I'm going to twist this now, do you believe that what may have done that to you, do you believe that, I don't believe it was a friendly spiritual thing, but what do you think it was, paranormal or extraterrestrial or even cryptid or ultra-terrestrial? Do you have any idea what you think may have pulled you over that fence?
I think that it was a grumpy spirit. I think that, you know, the night we were there, I was there with four other people. And we had a ghost box going. My good friend Marsha was asking questions. And I had the cemetery was surrounded by a chain link fence. And it was about 4 foot high. And I had my arms up over the chain link fence, looking into the cemetery to see if I could find or could see any movement.
Yeah.
And my brother was standing beside me with a flashlight.
Yeah.
And my personal opinion is it was a grumpy spirit that just grabbed a hold of me and yanked me over the fence.
Well, and again, I would like to tickle your mind a little bit in a bit here on whether or not, I know that people ask me the question all the time, how can you tell what is what? And the answer that I usually give is, I don't think any of us really truly know, honestly. We just hope the heck we survive our situations, you know. That would be very terrifying. The other thing, of course, which Dan and I would probably agree on here, is that, and I agree with Dan anyway up to this point, but what I'm saying is, when you go ghost hunting or searching in the middle of the night and you don't have much light on and you're walking around in some of these cemeteries, you have to be careful for your own safety's sake. And it's not just from a paranormal, am I going to run into a spook or an apparition or an angry one or something that might even be more extraterrestrial or whatever. You might fall into an open grave. You might trip over somebody's broom stick. You might, you know, all these kind of rakes, the whole 10 yards, and find yourself and getting hurt and suffering from an injury. So, you know, there are times when even during the daylight, I've walked around in cemeteries and go, whoops, oh my God, why did they leave that there? You know, 2 seconds away from having it clock me in the face, you know, that kind of thing. So have you ever, Dan, when you go into cemeteries, what type of hours are we talking about here when you go into a cemetery?
I will go kind of anytime the feeling hits me that I should go. I've caught as much evidence in broad daylight as I ever have at night.
Yeah.
The reason that we all tend to go at night is because the rest of the world's asleep at night. It's much easier to run a voice recorder at night when things might be a lot quieter than it is in the day when, you know, the roar of the city and the roar of the world is going on. But, you know, I have a couple of UV cameras and stuff that we've caught amazing thing on in the middle of the day. And a lot of times the cemeteries now, in the state of Illinois anyway, you are not allowed to go into a cemetery after sunset.
Right.
It's against the law unless you have permission. Now, my hometown cemetery, I have met with the cemetery board. They know that I'm respectful. They've watched the show. They've watched my videos. They are totally okay with me and my team going into the cemetery at night. Not everybody's like that. We usually don't breach the cemetery. We usually, in Maple Cemetery, there's a sidewalk that is right along the cemetery. And we, most investigations that we've ever done have been done from the sidewalk. If we do go into the cemetery, we don't go very far, but I do have permission. And at the time of taping, I did have permission to go into the cemetery. So I was breaking no law at the time.
Yeah.
I have permission to be anywhere in that cemetery at any hour of the day. And the police, being I am a corrections officer and in law enforcement myself, the police usually pull up and say, "Catching anything tonight, Dan?" You know, and then they usually proceed to tell me, "You'd never get me to go in there." I've had more positive experiences with the paranormal than I have negative. We've helped cross many spirits in the time that we've been doing this. We've helped people, you know, families get answers. And, you know, the thing is, Dr. Kelly, is not always are we going to get the full answer. You know that. Oftentimes we do something and we have 1,000 more questions than we ever get answers for. But, you know, here's the thing in a nutshell. If a family is in distress because they've lost a loved one or whatever, and whatever answer you may have found, whether it makes sense to you or not, brings comfort to them, well, didn't we do our job then?
I mean, a lot of times too, if you want to add to this, sometimes when people reach out to even psychics, I wouldn't even necessarily say counselors all the time or therapists, but even in the sense of psychics, some people will say, well, how do you know that psychic was right? You know what the bottom line is to that? The bottom line is the actual intention by which you went to the psychic to begin with. That's what it all comes down to. What is the intention? Was the intention just to get it out of your system and say, you know, just relieve your system of something, and you're talking to someone who might actually, but what if they gave you and led you astray? Maybe it doesn't even matter if they led you astray or they got it wrong or whatever. Maybe what was really needed at the time, just like what you're saying, Dan, is if that provides any kind of relief or anything that the family or the person wants to accept, that is what the achievable result was in the end, not necessarily the fact that you could provide all of the answers to a situation. And that's the same with a lot of people. Now, I have that type of background where I do a lot of talking with a lot of people. And a lot of times I just feel like, I don't know if I can even help these people, but for some reason, whatever element it was, maybe it was the trust, maybe they felt like somebody heard them, maybe someone cared or whatever, that was probably the piece that they were after, you know, under the underlying business of all that. So I have another question for you here, Dan.
Sure.
My question is, we've been through the cemeteries, and, you know, cemeteries are, of course, the very first thing that a lot of people think of. But, of course, the next thing they think of is a haunted house or a haunted bed and breakfast or a haunted place. Let's talk a little bit about a place you can talk about where you felt the experiences were like, wow, we're getting stuff here, and what you think that might have been attributed to. So any particular place you want to talk about right now and what you got out of that?
Well, I've got a couple places, but the first place I'll talk about is the Veterans Memorial Hall in Rockford, Illinois. It is the first episode of season one of Expedition Entity. We have experienced amazing things there. We have experienced shadow figures. We've experienced ghost box responses that are very intelligent. We have experienced numerous answers on numerous other investigations and are still getting the same answer. The spirits there are very inviting, except for one. And there's a stage at the Vets Hall, and there's a room up. The Vets Hall was built in 1903, and up on the third floor is a stage where they used to do performances and stuff, and now they have small concerts and stuff up there. And then there's an auditorium with a balcony. And up in the upper room where they used to get dressed and then walk down to for their performances and stuff, there is a spirit of a gentleman up there, and he doesn't like it very much when you're up there, and he will let you know that he does not like it when you are up there. And he's not negative. He's just grumpy. And some of the things that he will do to get you to leave are negative. But, you know, there's been a lot of psychics, a lot of sensitives in there. Everybody's in agreement, and I am too. He's not a negative entity. He's just a grumpy person that wants to be left alone. And when you tread on his territory, he lets you know, just leave me alone. So the Vets Hall is probably the number one location. That's a historical building, which holds a lot for Larry and I. Larry, like I said, my partner Larry is an Afghan war vet, so the Veterans Memorial Hall is very near and dear to him. I am not a veteran, but my grandfather was a World War II veteran, so, and I have many friends that are veteran, many family members that are veterans. You know, before I was a corrections officer, I was a firefighter for 16 years and a paramedic for 6. So I have a lot of strong, the fire department is a semi-military organization. So I have a lot of strong similarities and feelings that veterans would have. The other spot is the Battleground Cemetery in Stillman Valley, Illinois. That's what we wrote the book about, the Battleground Cemetery, the Ghosts of the Black Hawk War. The Battleground Cemetery is the first engagement of the Black Hawk War of 1832. And that war was largely forgotten. And what people don't realize is there's a little thing called the Trail of Tears. The Black Hawk War is what kicked that off. President Andrew Jackson, after the Black Hawk War, said, "We're not going to have any more Indian uprisings. You get everybody over to the west side of the Mississippi that is Native American, and that's where they'll stay." And lo and behold, that was the Trail of Tears. The city of Chicago back in 1832 was actually Fort Dearborn. It wasn't even thought of as a city until after the Black Hawk War. They decided to build a city there because it was such a good place for a fort. You know, so there's a lot of things that happened in the state of Illinois, the state of Iowa, the state of Wisconsin, and everything after the Black Hawk War was over with. But more importantly is those men that were laid to rest there that were Illinois militia. We've made personal connections with one, Captain Adams, who was his bravery so that Major Isaiah Stillman and the other 250 guys could get away for standing his ground against Black Hawk and fighting by moonlight and certain death so they could make their escape. We have a personal connection with him. We've made a connection with him. We helped cross him and get him not to be stuck on that battleground. And I'm here to tell you, Dr. Kelly, every time we go back there, I don't claim to be sensitive or psychic or anything, but you can literally tell when Captain Adams comes back to watch over us, because the whole battlefield takes on a whole different feeling. and you really feel as though you're being watched over and protected.
So let's talk a little bit about crossing over, because I know that there's differences of opinions about being crossed over or whether or not something will cross over, but then it decides to come back. Do you believe that even though initially something appears to be crossed over, do you feel that there are times when it comes back?
Yeah, I'll answer that. But by definition, ghosts are human spirits. They're human entities that have not crossed over into heaven for whatever reason, because they didn't want to be judged, because they think they did something bad, or they just don't realize they're dead. Spirits, by definition, are entities that have crossed over, that have went to heaven, if you believe that, or wherever, and can come back and visit whenever they want. So to answer your question, yes, I do believe that crossed spirits can come back and visit anytime they want, because Captain Adams comes back and visits us every time we go there. We just went down about 4 weeks ago to Starved Rock State Park in the middle of Illinois. And back in 1960, there were three women there that were murdered and their bodies were left in a cave in St. Louis Canyon. And one of them was stuck there. I was able to cross her over about 3 years ago. Larry and I went there a month ago and she came back, identified herself one more time. Now, I haven't been there for 3 years, by the same name, and through dowsing rods and ghost box, I was able to get the answers. Yes, thank you, Dan. You got me out of here, and I will come back and visit anytime you want me to.
Interesting. Do you think that there's some connection, though, with your energy? Because if, let's just say, for example, I went there, and I don't know if I would get the same result as you. Do you think that it has something to do with your connective energy or some type of a unusual trust that this entity may have had with you? Do you think that this would happen with just anybody?
I don't think it would happen with just anybody, but there are people that do have sensitivity or psychic abilities or empathic abilities that, you know, when a entity is stuck somewhere and, you know, things seem very dark, all of a sudden this person who can sense them comes along, and it's like a little light. Think of a lighthouse out in the darkness, and those entities are drawn to that light or that lighthouse because, hey, here comes somebody who can hear me. I haven't been heard for 180 years, and now there's a light. I'm going to walk towards it, and I'm going to talk to that person because I know they can hear me.
I swear, Dan, you must be my twin, because I just gave that exact expression to someone about a week ago. Exactly, almost exactly as you just phrased it. So, yes, Dan. And I think even though you may question this on occasion, I do believe that you have some type of sensitivity and empath ability. And not only that, because of your background with what you do, there is, and I need to explain this to people a little bit once again, there is a big connection here with traumatic experiences. You don't have to just be in the military to have PTSD or anything like that. It doesn't even have to be at that level. If once you go through, and I just wrote an article on this, and it's called Neurodivergent Beacon, which is basically the lighthouse effect. Why are these things always coming to me? That kind of thing. That's exactly what you just got done saying. And so for all you know, Dan, you're probably a neurodivergent beacon, and so am I. And so are a lot of people that may not realize it, but there's also, there is an element of unusual trust here, which I have to throw into the mix, because I don't think if you had a research team or somebody who wanted to, let's say, provoke the situation, get out of here or get in here, I want to see you right now, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not so sure that some of these entities that you have sought out or have sought you back would necessarily A, either show, B, be happy about the fact that somebody is there, even though they may be a beacon, but more of a, you know, someone they may not like. Do you think that energy has any kind of feeling or anything of that sort that can sense people and their intentions, whether they may be, you know, provoking or non-provoking? Do you think that entities have any kind of feeling at all?
I do. I think that, you know, if they were a decent person in life, they go on to be a decent person after they're gone. And that emotion, that feeling would, in my belief, transfer with them. You know, I believe that, to put it out bluntly, if somebody walked into my house or into my yard and started talking to me in a provoking manner. Now, Dr. Kelly, I'm 6 foot. I'm a 16-year correction officer veteran. And I go about 290 pounds now. You probably wouldn't come into my house and start talking to me that way, because I would probably grab you by the scruff of your neck and your pants and ship you right out the door, whether you liked it or not, because that would upset me. That would really, that's a disrespectful thing to do. So in saying that, if you're a spirit and you're in a house or a location or on a battleground or wherever, and somebody comes in and starts talking to you that way, it's either going to A, tick you off, or B, make you upset and not want to speak to them. And, you know, I sit back and I watch a lot of new investigators coming onto the scene every day. And I think that's a great thing. I think that the more people that are looking, the more possible it is that we're going to get answers. But here's the thing. A lot of them emulate people who provoke. And when you go and provoke, you know, it's no different. I mean, if you were interviewing me and I was being disrespectful, this interview wouldn't keep going. So if you're going to a cemetery and you're trying to interview a spirit and you're being disrespectful, that interview's not going to keep going. You know, a lot of it is, like I said earlier, it's common sense. Treat the spirits and the entities that are there like you would want to be treated. I have done that ever since day one, and I can't state enough. Larry and I never, ever have issues communicating with spirits, and it's because I don't threaten them. I don't challenge them. If they want us to leave, I leave. If something comes across the ghost box, stop. We stop, we pack our stuff, and we leave. They've had enough, they're done. And, you know, you need to have that level of respect. I don't think I can stress enough, it's all about respect. People give respect when they get respect. And in this day and age, that's so hard to try to drive home, because we live in a time where everybody wants something and they want it now, and they don't feel as though they have to work for it, and they have to be respected just because of what they're calling themselves. That's not the case. Respect is earned. You have to do things respectfully to get respect. Yep. And a lot of these younger teams that are out there provoking and throwing stuff on YouTube, you know, as great as I think that is, if you're doing it the wrong way, all you're doing is making other people that are impressionable that want to do this too, if they're watching you and you're doing it in that way that's negative, you're now teaching them how to be negative.
Good stuff, Dan. Let's head on over to part 2. Stay tuned.